Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
And you're listening to Studio 2 on Thursday, August 7th. Good afternoon, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Kevin McCrory in for Cherry Gregg.
Today on the show, Kevin, we're going to talk about SEPTA. SEPTA's obviously in the news quite a bit. They're facing a huge budget deficit, and if that budget deficit is not filled, they're going to proceed with major cuts and fare hikes.
But we're not just doing it in the straight news way today.
We're not. We decided to try a different format today because we've had a lot of conversations about SEPTA. They're often covering a lot of the same territory. And today we wanted to frame the show this way. How would we, the collective we, reorient SEPTA so that the agency does not end up in this familiar position facing a fiscal cliff again in the future? So we gathered up three transit nerds, and I think they would be fine with me calling them transit nerds, and each of them are going to present their bold ideas for how to fix SEPTA. This is pie in the sky, blue sky type of stuff. We're going to debate those ideas, and we're going to get ideas from the audience to contribute to the conversation. So today, here's the question. Listen carefully. This is a big time audience participation show. How would you fix SEPTA? What is your big, bold idea? Call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat.
So it's big picture thinking, maybe reshape the narrative around public transit in southeastern Pennsylvania.
The narrative and the reality.
Yeah.
Right? And both things need to be reshaped. So again, studio2 at whyy.org, 888-477-9499.
And it's Thursday, Avi.
Is it Thursday?
Every Thursday, you know, we do DJ of the Day.
Yes.
So if you have some ideas for songs that go along with the theme of the show, trains, transit, buses, big picture thinking.
Sure, yeah.
Send us your thoughts. Email us studio2 at whyy.org. You have to get that your pick in before 12:30.
Yep.
Producer Paige is back there in the booth, ready
to
sort through those selections and come up with what she thinks is the best song to play at the end of the show. So stick around for the end so that you can hear what the DJ of the day selection was.
Gotta stick around to the end. You gotta stick around right now for our trio of local news stories to kick off the show. Kevin, what's story number one?
Yeah, story number one. Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court says Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney, former mayor, did not have the authority to replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day. So you might remember back in 2021, Kenney signed an executive order basically saying Christopher Columbus's brutal treatment of the Native American population made it so we should change the holiday. And so he replaced in the formal designation of the city of Philadelphia, the holiday that was Columbus Day, with Indigenous Peoples Day. Now, there's this unanimous ruling comes out yesterday from the state Commonwealth Court, basically saying that executive order wasn't allowed to change an official holiday. It's a legislative action that required buy-in from city council. So because Kenny did it as an executive order, that was illegal in this unanimous decision from the state court. So as it stands now, the second Monday in October is again Columbus Day. Indigenous Peoples Day can still be celebrated. It had been before, but just not as formally. And now, essentially, Italian-American groups who had been fighting Kenny on this are celebrating the decision. You have the leaders of local Indigenous Peoples groups quoted in the Inquirer today saying, essentially, Columbus supporters are buying into propaganda that hurts the Native American population. So city council and Mayor Sherelle Parker, they could revive this again. They could say,
certainly could.
Let's make this a priority. Let's pass this through the official channels the way that the state court said that they should. But it's unclear essentially what they will do. And the council president, Kenyatta Johnson, was basically giving out no comments yesterday on this.
Yeah, and that's not a good sign if you're hoping that they'll make this change the right way and they'll do it permanently. Usually you get a comment if someone's considering taking up the idea. We'll see. You never know. But this is what's interesting about it to me is that it's a similar loss to the loss that the city took on removing or boxing up the Columbus statue in South Philadelphia. A court struck that down. And again, it was because the court said the city did not follow the proper process to get rid of that statue. And here's the court again saying you didn't follow the proper process for changing the official designation of this holiday.
Yeah. Story number two on me.
Story number two, a little marijuana interval here. Down in Delaware, recreational weed went on sale last Friday, and the numbers are in for the first weekend of sales. Officials say dispensaries sold $625,000 worth of recreational cannabis in the first weekend. They say that's above expectations. And also this month over in New Jersey, you might have missed this one, a trio of marijuana lounges opened up. These are the first three such lounges on the entire East Coast. One is in Camden County, the other two are in Atlantic City. A weed lounge is kind of what it sounds like.
It's you just a place, go hang out and get high?
Yep. You get together with your buddies or maybe with some strangers and you enjoy cannabis legally in a lounge. It's kind of like the version of a what a bar is for alcohol. That's what a weed lounge is for weed. One of the spots that just opened up in told the Inquirer that their setup is like a friend's basement. So I was picturing like That 70s Show or something like that. But another one of the concepts in Atlantic City is much sleeker. It's very upscale. It's almost like looks like a hotel bar or something like this. So this is a nascent concept. We'll see which one of those models wins out in the end. But as of now, you can go to a weed lounge in New Jersey.
It's interesting. I guess the culture around, you know, marijuana smoking has kind of been underground. It has been basement-y.
Yes, and extremely basement-y.
So I guess
sometimes Grateful Dead concert-y as well.
All this legalization happens, maybe there will be a culture change and there will be more establishments and it becomes more of an above-board thing to just go in public and hang out and do.
And I think actually there is sort of a, there's an important context to this, which is there's statistics that suggest alcohol consumption is flattening, maybe tailing off, and weed consumption is growing, right? Mm-hmm. And although alcohol has many harmful side effects, we know that from a health perspective, it's also been traditionally a social lubricant. People gather together, they meet with friends, they meet strangers at a bar. Cheers is entirely about this. There's an entire sitcom about this concept, right? And I think marijuana, because of the fact that it's been banned historically, doesn't quite have that culture around it. And I do think it's fascinating to try to create that culture from scratch and see if recreational marijuana can create a more recreational experience around weed.
I guess we'll see if it works or if the old culture is just so baked in that people don't go for it.
Oh, wow.
Story number three.
Did you have that one queued up, honestly?
Just came off the dome.
Wow, well done.
Our world champion Philadelphia Eagles are back at the Link tonight
for
their first game since their Super Bowl shellacking of the Kansas City Chiefs in February. In the always riveting preseason action of NFL, it's the Birds versus the Cincinnati Bengals tonight, 7:30 in South Philly.
Okay.
Now, there's this picture going around the internet that's become a little bit of a viral sensation, basically just showing the prices at the concession stand at the Link. You know, $17.50 for a thing of crab fries, $18.50 for a Miller Lite, $7.75 for a bottle of water.
$7.75 for a bottle of water.
So people online have,
which is essential to life on Earth.
That's true. People online have big feelings about this. It doesn't really come as a surprise to us that the prices are jacked up at the stadiums, but what's your take here?
Obviously, I feel bad that people have to pay those prices if they feel they have to pay those prices. My argument has always been, don't buy food at the stadium because you can bring your own food in.
Right.
And when I tell this to people, I swear, half the time I get this like blank look like I'm speaking another language. Yes, you can bring your own food into Citizens Bank Park and Lincoln Financial Field. It's way cheaper. The food is way better. I don't understand why people wait in those terrible lines to buy that terrible food at those terrible prices. Bring it in.
Makes sense to me, Avi. I mean, that's been my family tradition for years now as well. You know, officially, especially at the Eagle Stadium, it seems like that you have to wrap it in plastic. You can't just bring it in. But you have to wrap it in plastic. But clearly on both those websites, they say you can bring food in. A lot of people, to your point, don't seem like they know that.
What do you typically bring into the ballpark?
We're always bringing in hoagies. Now, also one time we cooked hot dogs, we've wrapped them in tinfoil, and we brought them in. And we ate hot dogs that we brought in ourselves. It's great.
It's so, you just need a little bit of planning. I usually get hoagies too. I go to either Antonio's, Cosme's, or Paisano's, depending on what my route is, how much time I have. And, you know, you have to hold on to it for an hour, but if you wrap it in tinfoil, it's a perfectly good hoagie. you're eating good. And I usually bring in a whole like family size bag of potato chips.
Now, what's interesting here is the arena that the Sixers and Flyers play at. You can't bring any food in.
Right.
It's very arbitrary. Why do they get to set that rule? I guess because they own the building and they can.
Well, the Eagles, when they opened Lincoln Financial Field in 2003, they tried to ban outside food. And people lost their ever-loving minds. And actually, Governor Ed Rendell had to intercede and get the Eagles to change that rule.
That's wild.
It's good stuff. Hey, man. Speaking of government interceding or not interceding, we're going to talk about SEPTA this hour. But to this hour, we're going to talk about how we could fix SEPTA for good. Send your comments in right now to Studio 2.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Cherry Gregg is off today. You probably know from the headlines that SEPTA faces a crisis. Without more money from state leaders, the transit agency will undertake major service cuts that officials warn could lead to a death spiral. Unfortunately, this is a familiar place for SEPTA, whose fate has always been tied to the political whims of Harrisburg. Today, instead of the typical roundtable analysis tethered to the daily news, we're going to try a different approach for this conversation. We've invited three guests, three transit nerds, to tell us how they would fix the ailing system. How would they ensure we don't end up in this same situation, Groundhog Day style, 5, 10, 20 years from now? They're each going to present a bold idea for how to fix SEPTA's finances, how to improve SEPTA's service, and how to upgrade SEPTA's infrastructure. And then we're going to debate those ideas. Let's introduce our guests. Jay Arzu is a doctoral candidate at the University of Pennsylvania Stuart Weitzman School of Design. Jay, great to have you.
Thank you so much.
Lauren Vitas is a government relations professional and author of Broad and Market, a weekly newsletter covering city council. Lauren, great to have you back.
Always happy to be here.
And Nick Esposito, founder and CEO of Circa Systems. Nick, also great to have you back on the show.
Glad to be here too.
And your input today, folks, is crucial because we want to debate your ideas too, your big, bold ideas. How would you fix SEPTA? What is your big, bold idea? Call 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat. And I'm already going to go off script, guys, because the first topic is how to fix SEPTA's finances. And I think we have a caller on the line who's got an idea. So this is Sarah from Point Breeze. Sarah, you're on Studio 2. What is your big, bold idea?
Hi. So I think everyone knows how awful the PPA is and how the car lobby industry is essentially at fault for how our country doesn't have a public infrastructure. So my idea is to allocate more of the PPA's profits and revenue into SEPTA.
All right. There's a nice idea to kick us off. So Sarah says take some of that PPA fine money and funnel it into SEPTA. Jay, what's your thought on that?
Well, as much of that fine money was put out, it's still not going to be enough to fund the system at a larger level. We need stable funding. We need funding that is going to help make the system whole. Because we have a system that is, you know, world class, has the potential to be world class, but we need to get the proper funding mechanisms in place for it to be that.
You're saying that that would help, but it's just the total amount is not enough that you could collect from PPA funds.
Well, we could take all the money we can get.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, but we need more than that.
More than that.
But a great idea.
Idea. So a great start there from Sarah. Gloria says we need dedicated government funding for public transit like the countries in Europe have. So Gloria bringing up Europe. Let's get into some of our ideas now, guys. Lauren Vitas, I want to start with you. How would you start to fix SEPTA's financial situation?
So I think step one of fixing SEPTA's financial system is actually part of it is a huge education process for the general public about mm-hmm. why this is so important.
Oh, wait, so educate us.
So I, you know, it's funny. I talked to a lot of people about this issue. And, you know, one thing I hear is that the folks who don't ride SEPTA are just like, oh, yeah, that stinks, but like, I don't use it. And they're car owners. I'm a car owner, but I rely on public transportation pretty regularly. And I think what we need to understand that SEPTA is a public good, not for just people who use it, but for everybody who lives in the region where SEPTA operates. When you look at what's going to happen if SEPTA goes offline or has these draconian service cuts, we're looking at, Jay and I were talking about hundreds of thousands of additional cars on the road.
That's right.
So if you're a driver who doesn't use SEPTA and you commute into the city every day on 76, your ride is about to get a lot worse, right?
So you're talking about building a political movement, political will. That's where you would start with this.
I would start with that. In terms of just like practically speaking, I think one thing that we should be looking at is maybe doing a regional sales tax that goes directly to fund SEPTA. Philadelphia's sales tax is already at 8%. We're 2 points higher than our surrounding counties. One of the percentage goes to the general fund to support general city operations. Another percent goes to fund public education. So I would question whether Philly, you know, given that we have a higher contribution anyway, but the surrounding counties looking at doing an increase on the sales tax that would go to directly support public transportation for all of the counties that make up SEPTA is, I think, a smart idea. Pennsylvania sales tax, you know, sales tax can be regressive, but Pennsylvania sales tax excludes clothing, it excludes groceries, it excludes a lot of the items that people who have lower incomes tend to spend more of their money on. They make up high. So it's a regressive tax, but it's relatively progressive in that grand scheme. And I think that would provide a significant and steady source of revenue that could help fund this public transportation system to ensure that people can get their kids to school, that they can get to work, and that they have the freedom to not have a car if they choose not to have a car.
And so you're talking about increasing the amount of the pie, the funding pie that comes from the counties, five counties we're talking about. Philadelphia and the four collar counties.
Yep.
What do we think about that generally, Nick? I mean, weigh in on that possibility of just more regional funding for SEPTA, because right now I believe about 2/3 of the funding comes from the state.
Yeah, that's correct. I was going to make that point, and I think that's what gets to the heart of, you said it yourself in the beginning, we're held to the whims of these politicians in Harrisburg, to the whims of politicians and these tax structures. And the idea that I came to with that, you know, I've seen from models around the world is we need to find more market-based solutions to fund the SEPTA system. It's run as an authority. It's based off of that money coming in. I've been to other systems around the world. I was, you know, a part of what got me onto the show is I wrote something about being in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. They have run it like a corporation. That's what it is a corporation. But a publicly owned one. So when I say corporation, I'm sure some listeners right now are like, oh man, he's talking about privatization. I'm not talking about privatization. I'm not talking about selling it to private equity so they can try some quick and dirty turnaround. And if it doesn't work, sell it for parts. I'm talking about publicly owned corporate model that relies on revenue from the system to fund itself. And when you do that, there's this whole network effect that's going to affect service, it's going to affect infrastructure, and it's going to lead to a lot more autonomy for the system and I think more resiliency.
Would this be kind of like Amtrak? I mean, Amtrak, my understanding of Amtrak is it's publicly owned, but for a for-profit type of model. Is Amtrak similar or dissimilar to what you're envisioning here?
So I don't know exactly on the Amtrak model. I said I'm not a transit expert on this. I'm more on the economic side of things, running in, like, you know, business in the circular economy. But yeah, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, basing it off of looking at it as a revenue model. And when you look at it as the revenue model, it's thinking, how can we get as many people possible on this system? Because it's great service. It's a great value. I mean, sometimes Amtrak goes back and forth between being sure. a great value or not. But the service is great. It's comfortable. It's nice. I like taking Amtrak.
So this idea, there would still be some taxpayer money going into it or no taxpayer money at all?
No, of course. I mean, that's the beauty about that public-private partnership when it's publicly owned. You have, I mean, any business, right? Any business needs initial investment and then continued investment when maybe times get tough. They're trying to do something new. They want to put in new stops, things like that. You have access to that tax money and that public funding structure. But then again, for the continued resiliency of the system, you're able to base it off of, again, those market solutions. Ridership's one of them. Real estate's another piece. That's a big thing they do in Hong Kong is they kind of operate almost like a real estate company. I mean, like, as they have their different stations and they make money off of that. But figuring out ways that you can make money as much as you can in the system, while again making it equitable, making it fair, and having public oversight, which is extremely important. I know that's challenging in this country. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the public-private sector, I think we have a very unhealthy relationship with both of them. I think the one side views the other side very negatively. And I feel, you know, I wish that we can get to a place where we could, those different sides can view each other in a more healthy way and they could work together. Because I think when you have the public and the private sector working together using market-based solutions, you're just leading to a better system.
All right. So I know you guys have some takes on that, Lauren and Jay. I'll start with you, Jay. This idea of taking SEPTA and turning it into like a for-profit model with public control, where does your mind go with that?
Oh, I love the idea, and I'll tell you why. For one, when we look at transit-oriented development and systems that have began to look at parking lots adjacent to systems, we're seeing projects that are bringing in $150 million, $200 million, real economic development. So I'm telling you here and now, when you look at the main line and you look at all these stations that have empty parking lots in the morning, that could be something that SEPTA could do. We could look at transit-oriented development, a lot of the regional rail stations, as one way to fund SEPTA. But I'd have to agree with the larger group that there has to be more state and regional funding coming into the system. When you look at peer systems like WMATA or even the MARTA system in Atlanta,
yep,
you're seeing that there is an agreement that we need to put more money into improving infrastructure and improving the public transit system. And that's something that, you know, this region has been behind on, and it puts our competitive edge at risk.
According to the Commonwealth Foundation, SEPTA gets about 27% of its operating budget from fares and local revenues. In Chicago, that number is 61%. In New York, it's 57%. It's a very different balance here. I want to bring in Ray from Collegeville, who wants to talk about taxing. Ray, you're on Studio 2. Yes. What's your big, bold idea?
Yes, thank you very much for giving me the chances. I think the issue is that the people of the three counties suburb of Philadelphia, they should pay the taxes because, first of all, financially, the suburb people have got more financial capability, but the public transportation is for everybody. And that must not necessarily mean SEPTA is also made Philadelphia International Airport. People in the suburb, including myself, I live in Montgomery County, I would love to pay for the public transportation because that sounds the civility. That's what we need to do. You go to Tokyo, there are three public transportation systems. We have to support it. It is important. And we just have to jack up the taxes for people in the suburb.
Jack up the taxes. I don't think the politicians are going to leave with that particular
phrasing. That on a bumper sticker.
But I like that idea from Ray. And Jaquan on YouTube has a very similar idea. Allow counties to fund SEPTA by raising taxes. If Philadelphia is the only county that wants to fund the system this way, then we should have the best system. SEPTA is spread thin, covering collar counties. And I guess here's where I put it to you, Lauren, because you dive into politics all the time. The way I look at it, it feels like there's this fundamental mismatch, which is right now there's a lot of people in this region who are really mad about these potential SEPTA cuts. The people that represent them agree with them 100%. The people that control whether or not these cuts are going to happen aren't really responsive to those constituents. And I just wonder how you make this system ever work if Harrisburg is contributing such a big percentage of the overall funding.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And I think there's a couple things that need to happen. Number one, again, I do think that we need to look at a regional tax, dedicated tax source. I think Harrisburg is more responsive and tends to be more open about giving money when they see that the counties have skin in the game and are also contributing. So I think that absolutely has to happen. I think, too, again, you know, part of the challenge is, look, transportation issues are statewide, right? this is public transportation, maybe a Philadelphia issue, a Pittsburgh issue, an Erie issue, but transportation as a whole. We have some of the worst infrastructure in the country. I think our bridges, our roads tend to be older and in poorer repair. So, you know, there's got to be a compromise both in how much the regional counties are contributing versus Harrisburg, but there's also got to be a compromise on a state level about how much money we're investing in the rural counties to fund it. I also think that we need to take this issue out of it out of the hands of politics. This has to stop becoming a political issue every two or 3 years. So tying SEPTA funding to the cost of inflation, where it automatically increases when prices of providing these services goes up, so that you're not asking politicians to take a tax vote every 2, 3, 4 years.
Is that why you like sales tax? Because sales tax is sort of by nature inflationary?
Yeah, it's by nature inflationary. It's automatic. It's relatively predictable. Obviously, when you have a recession, people's buying power, or they're a little, the consumer confidence goes down, people don't spend as much. But you have a reliable, steady source of revenue that doesn't require a vote in Harrisburg every 2 years.
Yeah. I guess the question is, what would convince Harrisburg politicians to give up this leverage point? Because this is a point of leverage for, you know, if you're in negotiation on all of this. Maybe if you're a Republican in Harrisburg, you don't particularly care about fare evasion at 69th Street Terminal, but it is nice to be able to hang that over someone, use the as a horse trading chip when budget negotiations happen. So I don't know, does anyone have any ideas for how you would convince state leaders to kind of relinquish this control and spread out the financial burden among the counties and localities instead? I'm looking around the table here.
Well, I mean, again, back to the point of they also need something, right? Mm-hmm. They also they control the Senate. They do not control the Republicans control the Senate. The Democrats control the House. Democrats tend to be in the more urban areas where the public transportation is an issue. Republicans tend to represent the more rural areas where infrastructure is an issue. And so I don't think it has to be a zero-sum game of one side gets something and the other side doesn't. What we need to do is figure out a system and a regular funding revenue stream that makes sense for both of those issues at the same time. And I think that's where the leverage and the compromise is, saying, you help us with public transit, we'll help you with your bridges and roads.
Hmm. And it gets back to the market-based solution. I mean, saying that, like, when you are making your own money, you're much in a better point to be able to have that conversation, right? They're like, we don't fully need all of your money, right? Like there's some separation there. And I think that when you're kind of beholden to them having to say yes all the time, then you're going to be in this situation. So
let me ask you, though, Nick, if you go to that kind of for-profit model with public oversight, how would they make more money? Yeah. Would it just be raising fares?
My question is, what's stopping them from doing that now?
Well, what's stopping them from doing it now is because people don't ride it as much. Why are you going to ride something that... So I was thinking a lot about this. I was doing the math. I went up and saw my friends in Mount Airy the other day. I'm making the calculation. How am I going to get up there? My wife had the car. She wasn't coming. I'm thinking, okay, can I take the train? I started doing the math on it, and I'm like, why am I going to do that? First off, if I take like the trains to do it, it's going to cost me almost $10 when I can get like an Uber pool where I can just take Uber and for not that much more money to get up there, right? And a much easier ride. If I wanted to take the bus, it's going to take me an hour and a half to get there. Also, the experience of being on the L to the train, like all these different, like if you're not, one, it's about cost and it's about the experience that you're having, the time it's taking you to do it. When I was in Hong Kong, I mean, these trains were coming every 5 minutes. They're packed. When I got off the air, like I flew in. We were tired. We didn't want to like figure out how to, you know, figure out the train system. We just got a taxi. It was like getting like flying into LaGuardia at 7 o'clock at night and trying to get to the East Village. It took us 20 minutes to get from the airport because no one's on the road because everyone's on public transportation because it's reliable, it's clean, it's convenient. It doesn't cost that much money.
But why do you attribute that to the model, I guess?
Because you're going to have, when you have more people paying money to get on the train, you're going to raise revenue to be able to do
that. I feel like, again, we're putting the cart, you're looking at a result and saying the good headways, the packed ridership, it's because this is private, public-private partnership. I agree with you. People aren't riding SEPTA because the times stink or it's unreliable, all of those things. I don't think that has anything to do with SEPTA. SEPTA didn't design the system to operate that way. SEPTA is operating the system that way because they don't have enough resources to operate the system to its full capacity, sure, to its full potential. I think it, at the end of the day, it starts with having enough funding that you can create those conditions. But blaming SEPTA that their headways stink and that, you know, the experience isn't great, they don't have the resources to improve on either of those things.
I'm not saying that tomorrow we say, forget state funding, we're going to just go straight to this model that I'm talking about, right? There has to be some kind of phased in thing. But when you're not basing it off of trying to get the best experience possible to get the most amount of users on there, and I feel that by
Do you think SEPTA's not doing that?
I mean, does it? I mean, it shows.
Do you think they don't want more ridership? Do you think they don't want cleaner?
Again, I was a public servant. You know that, Lauren. Like, I don't think people wake up that morning and say, like, I'm going to go to work and just dial in and do the bare minimum because I don't care. People go to work and they want to do the best that they can with the resources. But when the model and the system doesn't operate in the way to make that possible, like I said, getting back to the thing, if you're basing funding off of ridership, right, you have to make sure that you make as many people ride this thing as possible. And right now, that's not happening.
Because I don't think they have the resources to make this. This is what happens with public goods that they try to privatize, that they try to strip, that they try to reduce. Is they reduce funding to them, the experience gets terrible, people leave. So because people leave, they don't have the resources, so they have to reduce times, they have to look at public education. It's the same thing. If we create the self-fulfilling prophecy of we're inevitably leading to these types of systems failing because we don't fund them enough, and we create a self-fulfilling prophecy, the death spiral, as SEPTA calls it. And I don't think that's because of SEPTA's ownership structure. I don't think that's because of SEPTA's leadership. I think that's because they don't have the funding, and public goods across the country are being starved right now because anything public is socialism, and socialism is bad, and I don't use it, and I don't benefit for it, so I don't want my tax dollars going to it. I think that's the root of why it's not just Philadelphia. It's transit agencies, it's education, it's public libraries all across the country, because we have gone into this idea that we shouldn't be funding public goods.
Well, we do have to leave the conversation there, but a good passionate debate. I want to bring in one more caller before the break here. This is Trevor, friend of the show, Trevor from Sea Isle, on line one with, I think, a financial fix or a potential financial fix or two. Hey, Trevor, welcome to Studio 2. What's your big idea?
Hi, thank you for having me. Longtime listener, love the show. While I'd be someone who would advocate for, of course, public ownership, public funding, my ideal would be just a tax on legal weed. But we could look to our neighbors in Toronto. So Toronto is 70% funded by the city and riders, and the way they do it by having that public ownership, they also use a little bit of investing in real estate. And while I'm no fan of landlords, we have to use with, you know, what we have. So I know SEPTA is already doing these leasing agreements along the Chestnut Hill lines. So if SEPTA, instead of leasing them to developers, use their infrastructure budget, which is different from their operational budget, in owning, say, either mixed use or housing developments, to get more riders, they have this reliable way to get to Center City, and it provides a more structured funding path for them. And we could even look to New Jersey, so NJ Transit doesn't own any developments, but when we look at more developments around commuter rail, like in Somerville and Bound Brook to New York, it does increase ridership, and that could be something to be paired with a government fix, like county funded fixes.
Yeah, great call from Trevor. Thank you so much, Trevor. And we're about to go to a break. I know we're all bubbling with ideas right now. Want to talk about service, want to talk about infrastructure, but I do want to read this comment from Craig in Haverford because it touches on things we've already talked about. Craig says almost every public transit system in the world runs a deficit. Certainly every big city transit system in the US does. There are only a few transit systems that run a surplus or profit. One that does is Hong Kong's, which is privately owned. It runs a profit because it serves the very densely populated area of the city. The streets in Hong Kong are narrow, extremely congested, gasoline is expensive, parking is scarce, cars are expensive, and the system is private. In addition to having an incentive to operate at a profit, it also has real estate developers, etc., etc., etc. But I want to get to this last point that Craig makes. In order for SEPTA to break even, we need to make driving expensive, difficult, and inconvenient. It's just too easy to drive around or in and out of Philadelphia. And we didn't really touch on that. The idea is that SEPTA has a basically stiffer competition because in America, it's easier to drive a car than it is in some of these European and Asian cities. So let's put a pin in that conversation. We're coming back on the other side of this break, asking for how you would fix SEPTA. What's your big, bold idea? Now that we fixed the finances, we're going to talk about how to fix service. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat. We'll be right back on Studio 2. Don't go anywhere.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and this hour we're talking about our bold ideas to fix SEPTA with our great guests. Jay Arzu is a doctoral candidate at the University of Pennsylvania's Stuart Weitzman School of Design. Lauren Vitas is a government relations professional and author of Broad and Market, a weekly newsletter covering city council. And Nick Esposito is the founder and CEO of Circa Systems. If you're listening at home, join the conversation. How would you fix SEPTA? 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Natalie says, I work in transit and know that more than 85% of the referendum to support transit around the country passed. People everywhere vote to tax themselves to have better service. SEPTA needs a dedicated source of funding. Could be a halfpenny sales tax, could be a small addition to property tax, could be a reallocation of existing tax with no increase. But as Natalie says, it all comes back to taxes. Let's talk about service, Jay Arzu. How do we make, we've talked about this idea that, you know, if SEPTA had the money to do it, we really want service to be more reliable. We want the system to feel safer and cleaner and brighter and more inviting and more regular. What's your fix for SEPTA service, Jay?
Well, my fix is, number one, the idea that we want a system that is welcoming.
Yeah.
We have to have a welcoming system, not just for the folks visiting next year for the events in 2026, but for regular riders that are just trying to get to work or to get to school. Number two, we have to look at best practices. Not, you know, in an American exceptionalism way where we're just looking within the country. We need to look internationally at best practices. But what if we're going to look at the country, we need to look at what systems bounce back the greatest from the pandemic and why. And when
what are you seeing out there, Jay?
What I'm seeing is SEPTA has done a decent job, but the best practice leader in that space is the Washington Metro, the WMATA system. They've been able to bounce back in a way that a lot of other systems have not been able to. And what they did is they centered it on, of course, having a welcoming system and pushing against antisocial behaviors. But the core of making the system work is high frequencies. And they didn't wait until years after the pandemic to do that. They came back and said, we want people to come back to the system. So we're going to have 4 to 5 minute frequencies, not just during rush hour, but an off peak too, to make sure that people who don't have a traditional 9 to 5 can use the system as well.
Can I dig in on that, guys? Maybe get some comments from you. One thing that's changed after the pandemic is not just that ridership went down and is still slowly trying to recover. It's that the way people move throughout a given day has changed. You know, a lot of people might want to use these services not in the 9 to 5 window. I'm thinking about regional rail specifically. Folks who used to do that daily commute in from the suburbs, maybe now they more need regional rail for that night out or that weekend trip. I mean, is that something we have to look at, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, when I think of the system, it really feels like it was built to get people down into Center City to go to work and then go back home, whether they're from neighborhoods in the city or the burbs. And that's, I mean, again, that's if you base it on that, that's what you're going to what happened after the pandemic when not many people are going down. Again, ridership dips and then all these problems that we're talking about start to happen. So I think that is a real thing. And yeah, it's frustrating when it's like a Saturday and you just want to like go somewhere in the city, maybe not just a center city, maybe like my trip to Mount Airy or somewhere else in the Northeast. And it's just so hard to get there on public transportation. And when you do the math, you're like, I will just rather drive or take a car share.
Yeah.
Why am I going to take the train to do that? And that's frustrating.
Lauren, any thoughts on this? But then also your big service improvement idea.
Yeah, I think, you know, to me, I look at it as there are three things that need to happen. SEPTA needs to be number one. It needs to be safe. People need to feel safe riding the system. Yeah. So it needs to be safe. It needs to be perceived as being safe. It needs to be reliable. And that goes to the headway times, things like that. I think Nick and Jay make a great point that, you know, a lot of times what we'll see is you'll see a route that runs, you know, maybe every 20 minutes, and only when the buses are packed do they add another bus and things like that. And I think it's a if you build it, they will come situation. And so sometimes you kind of have to leave with that operating loss, knowing that someone who might...
Which is going to feel risky to someone who's planning a budget, saying we're going to invest in something that maybe the demand is not quite there
100%. Yet. But to be clear, we just solved the funding crisis in the last segment. So I'm assuming that they have all the money they need to do this. It's an ability, look, if someone is leaving work and they have to go pick up their kid by 5:30 or they're getting charged $50 for the late pickup and they open the SEPTA app and the SEPTA says it has that little untracked.
Yeah.
Are you going to risk it or are you just going to call an Uber?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And so I think the reliability has to be, that's a foundational component of that. And then the final thing, it has to be clean because, you know, you have the people who ride SEPTA because they don't have other options, right? They can't afford a car. They don't want a car. SEPTA is their primary mode of transportation. And then you have the people who could ride SEPTA. They could take an Uber. They have options, right? You want the system to be in such a condition that SEPTA is always the first choice.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're there yet, but we will get there now that we've solved the funding crisis.
I mean, I do think the cleanliness thing is huge. And I grew up in the DC area, and Jay mentioned the Metro. You know, there are things about the Metro that are just worse than SEPTA. There's no doubt about it. But one thing that I always thought was better was the cleanliness. And I would love to hear, you know, how they managed that. It's a newer system, and maybe that has something to do with it. But I'm just so curious how they got to that place. I want to bring in a caller now. This is Kevin from Cheltenham on the line. Hey, Kevin, you're on Studio 2. Thanks so much for joining us. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Hey, guys. So there's a lady there, her name is Terry Gross. You probably heard of her before.
Sure.
If you guys had any issues at WSJY, you probably would turn to Ms. Gross and say, hey, what do you think, Terry?
Sure. Like,
what do you think we can do better? And she probably gave some really good ideas. I'm not quite sure why we don't have a phone full of operators calling in and asking them, because we have a lot of guys who've been around for 20, 30, 35 years.
Yeah. Well, you're on the line now. You're on the line now, Kevin, and I agree with you. We definitely could have and should have done that. But why don't I hear from you about how you would fix it?
Yeah, I'm not really sure why we're trying to reinvent the wheel, because if we have New York getting 60%, 70% of the money from the fare box, and Chicago approaching 70%, then I'm not understanding. If I'm in Allentown, Allegheny County, or York County, or Dauphin County, or any county outside of the five that we serve, why I would implore my representative to never send a penny there ever until they fix their situation at the fare box.
Mm.
You don't have any – if you don't have the people there paying, I have my own problems in Allegheny County to deal with. Why would I send a penny to a black hole that the people just walk on the system every single day and not pay? So until we get some dignity around the fare box, we're all going to – I promise you, continue to spin our wheels and spin our wheels because it makes no sense. We can talk about great service, cleanliness until the cows come in. Until you have three things, you have to have a public announcement with a city hall news conference outside, news media, newspaper, all kind of media blitz to say, hey, people of this region, we need you to pay your share at the box. The second thing you need is dignity and something at the fare box. Hey, excuse me, sir. That was $2.50. You just didn't put anything in. And some public humiliation or accountability at least, right? And the third thing is you need officers to step on the bus randomly, and check people, ticket people, maybe pull some people off. So then if I'm a fare evader, I'm never going through that embarrassment. I may have a warrant out for me. I don't know what's going on, but I'm not going to take that chance.
Interesting.
And so when you get So all of these pie-in-the-sky ideas, and I've been to Tokyo to do this and this and that. No, the best practices are right here.
Thank
Carrie
you, Kevin.
Gross would tell you how to fix that show.
Thank you right? so much. Thank you, Kevin. Okay. And I'm curious what Terry's thoughts would be on this particular topic, too. But that's a great call. And I will point out SEPTA's fair evasion enforcement has skyrocketed recently. They're doing way more in that area than they used to do. The Inquirer had some numbers. I think it was 3,000 plus sort of enforcement. I don't know if it's exactly it's not arrests, but enforcement mechanisms versus a tenth of that in the prior time period. So I don't know, Nick,
I love that article too, because it definitely delve into, I think people have their biases on who they think through fair evasion. And I love when they were seeing people in suits, you know, coming off a business evading fares. And I think, but I sometimes feel like that's too little too late, right? Again, if you're thinking about how do we make sure that we're making revenue off of as many people, you would have caught that way earlier because it's affecting your revenue because 20% of people aren't paying to get onto the system.
Now, to be fair, the amount of money that they lose from fare evasion, even if you made all million. Of that up, it's not going to fill the hole.
But still, if my business was losing $68 million, I would think about it before it got into the papers, right? I mean, it's something that would be on your radar if that was happening. And when you start your trip with an antisocial type behavior as evading the fare, it's going to lead to a lot of other things where you talk about the cleanliness, the safety of things like that. And, you know, to the last caller, yes, as I said this all the time when I was in city government, you cannot enforce your way out of problems, right? You have to figure out the social underlying issues, but also the design to it. And we'll talk about infrastructure in a little bit, but there's other ways that you can stop the fare evading from happening and thinking about it in an investment type thing. If we do this, it's going to prevent this, which will lead to more of that. You know,
do you have a big service fix that you'd like to see, Nick, before we move on to infrastructure? We are short on time.
I mean, my big service fix was, again, back to what I was talking about, if you base it off, if you have more of a fare-based thought that you're basing it more on, making sure that those trains are running constantly, they're clean, it's a great experience, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're getting more and more, it's a feedback loop. You're getting more and more people on, it's more and more funding, the system's getting better. The market-based solution then is a network effect into better service.
A couple quick comments. I'm not going to get to all the commenters. I'm so sorry. But Susan says, my complaint as a person living in the burbs who cannot attend cultural events in Philly in the evening, especially on weekends, the trains return to the burbs 9:55, 11:55. The first is too early. The second's too late. It just, doesn't work. William says, I have a bold idea, but it would not address the immediate problem. Amend the state constitution to remove the balanced budget requirement. Okay. Thinking a big picture there. Craig from Mount Airy, with Philadelphia and surrounding counties contributing a significant share of tax revenue to our state, can that justify a mandatory and proportional diversion of state funds to SEPTA? Maybe this is already being done. Okay. Infrastructure real quick, Jay. Now that we've got better service, we've got more money. Now we're trying to think big picture. How do we build out this system so it's super robust? Where are you going, Jay?
I would like to go back to something that Lauren said earlier in the conversation, is that we need to depoliticize infrastructure. Infrastructure is not red. It is not blue. We need to make that very clear. As we're speaking, the DVRPC has the Connections 2050 plan, where they're looking out to 2050 and they have all their projects. On that list, we have a few things that are funded, but the unfunded list is massive. Mm. And you have reimagining regional rail projects in there. You know, you have PATCO to University City. You know, what that document showed us is that with the proper transportation funding, if we're doing what Denver did with Fast Tracks, or what Seattle did with the different Sound Transit referendi, we could fund expansions to areas of the region where people want to go, which is going to increase the amount of people who ride the system. For under $10 billion, we could construct the Roosevelt Boulevard subway, the Broad Street line to Navy Yard, and the PATCO to U City. We got to get our show on the road. Our region needs to be competitive. And the longer we wait to push these projects, they're only going to get more expensive. So we got to get it going.
Lauren, real quick. I see you nodding along there to a lot of what Jay said. What do you want to add?
Jay and I are pretty much in lockstep. Every day we wait is a day. It's going to cost us more to do this. And we have to be willing to think bold. We have to be willing to take the risk that, building this will cause people to use the system will result in additional development. You know, Pennsylvania, we're losing population.
This is a lot about attitude. It's like, be bold, lead, don't wait. You're talking about, like, spend money now and you believe that the payoff's going to be there down the road.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you look at the country, the average age of the country's infrastructure projects, you know, our boldest thing that we've done in Pennsylvania recently was to fix I-95 in 6 days when it exploded, right?
Sure.
And there was a parade for reopening a highway.
There was literally a parade with
mascots. Yes. And, like, we're celebrating that. And we're like, yeah, we can do anything. Then build the Roosevelt Boulevard subway. You want to do something? I will come to that parade.
All right. Nick Esposito, we're getting toward the end of the hour here.
Mine is really around technology, around infrastructure. I mean, it's like they rolled out the tapping payments. It was trying to use my regular card, not my phone, and it was hotlisting my card if I used it more than once in a day, which is ridiculous. It's not consistent. They don't roll out, even though they put, like, the times. If you're on the platform on the Market Frankford line, yeah, you're out in the neighborhoods. It doesn't do that. Today, I got off at 5th Street. I took the train here because I went on the show, so I went down. But technically, I got off on 5th Street, but if I would have looked on the board, I was getting off at Erie Torsdale. So yeah, why does that happen all the time? If you're new to the system, maybe a non-native English, it's just like, if you hear that you're getting off at a stop, you get off at the wrong one. That's super frustrating in the system. There's just, like, I think a lot of easy technological infrastructure fixes that we can make and beef up the system.
McRae says, tax gasoline, a modicum in Philadelphia and the collar counties. Also, Claymont has a brand new beautiful station. It will go dormant without SEPTA. Deb says, why not increase the tax on gasoline statewide and have that dedicated to SEPTA? It could discourage driving and encourage taking public transportation instead. So that's, you know, incentives in both directions. So I want to thank you guys for doing this sort of experimental show with us. I had a ton of fun. Jay Arzu, doctoral candidate at the University of Pennsylvania Stuart Weitzman School of Design. Great to have you, Jay.
Thank you so much.
Lauren Vitas, government relations professional and author of Broad and Market, a weekly newsletter covering city council. Lauren, great to have you.
Always a good time.
Nick Esposito, founder and CEO of Circus Systems. Also a pleasure to have you, sir. And I hope you guys all enjoyed this.
Glad to be here. Thanks so much, Avi.
All right. DJ of the day. Got to announce it now. We have two DJs of the day, apparently, Maura and Mike, with this song, The Wacky World of Rapid Transit. Never heard of this one. By a band called Del the Funky Homo Sapien. Let's hear it. In my jeans, to many it may seem that the public transportation really is a gain, and I agree with the theory, because it's 3:30 and the bus was due at 2:35. I wear my jabot so I can wait with pride. I waited at the bus stop feeling kind of high from a split that I smoked. I ripped up a book, the little scene when the... Oh, man. The weed story from the Roundup got into the lyrics there a little bit. Great song, great choice. Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. And today is our intern Robert's last day with us here at Studio 2. From the whole team, thank you, Robert, for your contributions. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. This is Studio 2. We'll talk to you next week.